हरिः ॐ सहना भवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama
Bottom of 5, text 88. Therefore, why is it explained that there are differences amongst the avatar forms? It is said in the scriptures that they are all complete, since they are all the Supreme Lord. However, the avatars do not display all of the powers. This verse gives the answer to the objection. Though all these forms, that is, the Vilas and the Swamsa are complete, like the Swayamrupa. All powers are not displayed in any form which is Vilas or Swamsa. Though the scriptures say that all those forms are complete, verse 86. There are also statements such as Ete Chamsha, Kala, Pumsha, which explain that Krishna is the Amsi. It is correct to say that all forms are perfect, since they possess all good qualities. But there is no fault in calling Krishna the Amsi, because he displays all the qualities, whereas the Vilas and Swamsa forms do not.
Okay.
If this explanation is not accepted, then the latter statement, Ete Chamsa Kalapumsha, should have to be rejected. Text 89.
All right.
Yes.
It appears from this text that the verse 87, the example of the Vajra stone, was part of the Purva Paksha. Because now he started to give the answer to the objection in verse 88.
No, your 87 is explaining how the Lord is. They're the same person, but now this one is explaining the reason they're explained differently is because they manifest different potencies.
So it looks like the objection is starting in 86 and ending at the first line of 88. Therefore, why does it explain that there are differences among the avatar forms?
No, I think it's that this comes up from this. In other words, this is the point. Because in each one you get some objections. I would say it means you would have that, this one might be starting from there, but I don't think it's exactly what he's doing, because we see in 86 he's also giving objections. Because one is showing that they're one, but they're different. So the oneness is of the same person. The difference is how much potency is being manifest. See, because Krishna, being the Amsi, he knows all the way through. While the particular avatar at that point may not know what's back. Because they're only manifesting a certain amount of potency, that means also the Yogamaya element is that much. And Krishna's will be completely full. Is that something here?
So Maharaj,
yes.
I'm seeing the origin of Amsa?
Yes, yes, yes. I like avatar, avatari.
Yes.
Yeah, same. Text 89. Amsha means manifesting at all times only a small portion of the powers of the Lord. Purna means manifesting many of the powers by the Lord's free will. Someone may argue that since the Vilas and Swamsa forms possess all the qualities, then they must sometimes show all these qualities. This verse defeats this argument. By describing the characteristics of the Amsha. Amshatvam here means the position of Ekatma Rupa. Krishna, then taking the form of Narayan, will display only the qualities which have been described in relation to Narayan in the scriptures, and will not display all the qualities of Krishna. Thus, there is no contradiction in describing the Vilas and Swamsa forms as partial manifestations. And so, the complete potency is there, but he's only going to manifest a certain amount, because Narayan means people are relating to him in that way. You don't manifest something else. You know what I'm saying? Like that. You know, it's just like the president at the presidential inauguration. People see him as the president. He only manifests those aspects. He might be a great karaoke singer, but he's not going to do that there, right? Of course, unless he's Clinton. But other than him, then they just don't do that. Right? Is that what somebody says? So that's the idea, is that what is there, it's not a problem that saying, well, if they're not manifesting, they don't have. No, they have, but they only manifest how much is there. That's the point, is that he does all these activities at once. He can do all of them at once, so it's not a problem that he's only manifesting that much potency. You know, so that's the point. Is that he means we have to, you know, take on the mood, the dress, the environment, and all those things, and then change it for another as we change what we're doing in a day. But Krishna can do all of those at once. And so then, you know, if we thought staying at home was nice, you can stay home all day, because one form does. If you like something at the office, you can stay in the office all day, because one form does that. You know, another form can be out, you know, at the power lunch, another one out playing golf, right? Another one on vacation. You know, so like that, he can do all these things, but you only manifest what you require in that situation. Otherwise, then if the mood is changed, then they will manifest that other form.
Yes.
Like that. Yes.
What they're trying to establish? What's the point?
The point is that it's the same Krishna, but at the same time he's only manifesting these partial points. So that's why both aspects are being explained. They're saying he's the same, but they're saying explaining the difference of the avatars because they manifest different moods. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Also, does it matter who is the original? I mean, for Krishna, when we explain that he has many forms, one here, one there, so there should be one original one, or it doesn't matter? It
means there is, yes, that the one original is Krishna. That's the whole point, is that there you see the full manifestation of all the potencies. So that's why Krishna is special, that's why he's attractive. Right, so you even see is that the demons aren't getting liberation because they're not being attracted. Nrisimhadeva is coming and performing his particular function and interacting with the devotee. But he's not displaying that attractiveness that even the non-devotees can appreciate. Well, Krishna is. Mm-hmm. Like that. Is that so? Yeah. Okay. Because this point is that, I may ask, but a lot of times devotees make these distinctions. Oh, that's Dwarka Krishna, we're not interested. This is like, what do you mean? It's the same person. It's just a different mood. And the point is, rasa is rasa. So that's another thing. They think, oh, the rasa is different. No, rasa is one thing. Then there's different details of its manifestation. But it's not that, it's a completely different thing. So, oh, this is not rasa, or this is, you know, no taste. Or, so these kind of things get rid of that. Then you can appreciate everything in the Bhagavatam. Because it's four Paramahamsas, that means from the first verse to the last verse, everything is relishable. Right? Not just only certain chapters of the 10th canto. Does that make sense? So it deals with all this, because these are points that are sometimes not appreciated. You know, you don't look at the difference is only in the specialness on what they manifest, but otherwise it's the same person. Right? Because if it's not, how is it we're sitting here, we're offering our prayers, but Krishna's hearing? Right? But technically, according to the principle of rasa, is as you surrender, he reciprocates. So, you know, much of the time, there's a good chance you're talking to Paramatma. Mm-hmm. But you're addressing Krishna, because you're addressing him as the Supreme or this or that. So he's reciprocating that way. But it's Krishna who's hearing. You know? At the same time, as Krishna is mugdata, so he's absorbed in the yoga maya and his pastimes. So he doesn't know he's the Supreme, is not worried about those things. So he's not, if he's not the Supreme, then he's not, you know, the Purusha avatars or the other avatars, so therefore he's not here. You understand? That's why then these things are important, because then people get into all kinds of mental speculation and get really weird. But the point is he hears because it is him. It's just that as Paramatma, all he has to do is say yes or no on what you're going to do. How much potency does that take? You know what I'm saying? Grandmothers sit in rocking chairs on porches and control whole families. You know, so how, what, you know, saying how much is necessary? You understand? Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's okay, so it's all by the Lord's free will. So it's his free will that he does like this. Krishna, when taking the form of Narayana, will display only the qualities which have been described in relation to Narayana in the scriptures, and will not display all the qualities of Krishna. Because if he displays all the qualities, he'll take the form of Krishna. Thus, there's no contradiction in describing the vilas and samsa forms as partial manifestations. Thus, forms such as Nrisimha do not display the qualities of giving liberation to the demons and all attractiveness displayed by Krishna. Consequently, those forms do not give liberation to the demons. Proposing that all the forms display all the powers would be contrary to the conclusion of the scriptures. So it's not saying that devotees can't get liberation for these other forms, just the demons don't. Because the devotees are thinking of the Lord, they are attracted to the Lord. But the demons, these other forms, they're not attracted. So the demons don't get liberation. Right? Devotees will get, but not the demons.
For the demons, the only chance is to meet Krishna.
Yes.
Would that be why Prahlad Maharaj had to ask Nrisimhadev for the benediction of liberating Hiranyakashipu?
Yeah, but that's just also, that would be from the preaching level, you know, from that aspect of the Uttama, but it's also what you call conventional. You know, it's just you're always asking for nice things for those who are, you know, family members or close or friends. You know, like Yudhishthira Maharaj is asking or questions about the Yadus. It's conventional. It's just that's just the culture. That's what you do. It is described in the Bhagavatam that Lakshmi desired the dust of Krishna's feet. If Narayana manifested all qualities of Krishna, this would not occur. Otherwise, why ask? If Rama manifested all qualities of Krishna, the sages on seeing Rama would not have desired to see Krishna. But this is described in the Padma Purana. If the three Purusha forms had all qualities of Krishna, they would not be described in Brahma Samhita as Krishna's amsas. Right? And also Advaitacharya would take care of everybody. He would already attract everybody in that. But he doesn't manifest those qualities. So only because the people have developed such demoniac mentality, so the only one that can attract them is Krishna. Right? And but Krishna also is the element is that they have to be interactive. Here is then if you take the mood of the devotee, then you don't have to worry about them taking the first step. You can go out and start things. In many scriptures, it is described that Sankarsana takes Vasudeva as his superior and worships him. and Lakshmana and his brothers worship Rama with great devotion. If they all displayed full powers, this would be impossible. Though Balarama is Krishna's elder brother, he speaks as follows. Who is this mystic power, and where has she come from? Is she a demigod or a demoness? She must be the illusory energy of my master, Lord Krishna, for who else can bewilder me? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.13.37. The Amsi, Purnatvam, has the ability to manifest a variety of powers by his will alone. Thus, the Amshas manifest by the Amshi. The Amshi does not manifest all by the Amsha. Because Krishna is the Amshi, all others are manifest from him. He is not manifest from any other form. Because they were also, what was that other term they used for them? He's the Amshi, so the Purnatvam. But then what was the term he used for the... It was also Amshatvam, yes. Yeah, Amshatvam. It just means the nature of. So the nature of the Amsha is that they only manifest a particular amount of power for the particular situation of pastime or devotees that they're interacting with. Just like when he took the form of Vishnu, it's still Krishna, the forerunner of Vishnu, and he's standing there. And the gopis are looking around for Krishna, and they see him. And so then they ask him, where is he? You know, where's Krishna? You know, and then he points or something. It's quite confusing there. But then when Radharani comes, because of her love, he can't maintain that, only manifesting that amount of potency. She draws that from him. So then he's trying to stay as forearm Vishnu, but he keeps coming back into Krishna and going that, you know, and he can't hold that. So that's the whole point, is that it's that mood of the devotee. So because they're dealing with him in that way, that's how he manifests. Like Prahlad Maharaj wants to see the Lord in that way. So therefore he's like that. Met Nrisimhadeva at the Rasa dance. What a trip. He has got to comb all that hair. You know, he can't just go with his mane out like this. You know, you'd have to comb it and, you know, do it up a bit. So, therefore, better to come as Krishna, you know, less hair to deal with. Right? You know? Text 90. Shakti, or power, means the qualities of controlling others. Sweetness, mercy, and control of karma and time. The manifestation and non-manifestation of Shakti is the cause of grading the Amshi and Amsha. Okay, so Shakti means qualities of controlling others, sweetness, mercy, and control of karma and time. So you tell the gradation of the Amshi and Amsha by this. Yes. Because what's manifesting is Shakti. The attractiveness is Shakti.
Right. Who else except Krishna is Amshi?
No one. Means Braja Krishna is Amsi. Amsi. And everybody else is Amsha.
So what's the meaning? The manifestation and non-manifestation. He's the only Amsi.
No, the manifestation, non-manifestation of Shakti is the cause of grading the Amsi and Amsha. So manifestation is Amsi and non-manifestation is Amsha. Does that make sense? In other words, Krishna is important here, means Purnatvam, so complete. He has completeness, right? The Tvam means the ness, right? So he has that completeness that he's manifesting all the potencies, all the Shaktis, while everybody else is manifesting less. So that's what makes them Amsha. Does that make sense? Right? That's how you can discern. Like that, that's the cause of grading. So that means Balaram, they'll be manifesting a lot. But let's say Matsya is manifesting just a small amount. Right? He's just swimming around and pulling the boat, and he's not doing a whole lot more. Right? it's a nice service like that. Does that make sense? So therefore you can understand that he's, you know, an expansion of an expansion. Of an expansion. Of an expansion.
So you do it like you take Krishna, is a full, and then you compare full manifestation, and then you compare everybody else to him.
Yes.
Not like you take Matsya, check his qualities, then see who's better than him.
You can do it that way if you want, but then that will take you a long time, since the avatars are unlimited. So it's easy to start with what Rupa Goswami says and just take that. Because he's giving the Shastra quotes, so that it works. So in a very short time, he's showing that. It means you'll get in Brihad Bhagavatamrita the showing of that, but it'll take a long time to do this. He'll do this in a few pages. While in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it'll take, you know, a whole volume. So it's doing, the only thing is because you don't have the storyline, it's not as, how you say, palatable. Though it's quick. Yes. This verse gives the meaning of Shakti. Aishwarya means control of all others. Madhurya, that's why people who have opulence, they control others. You know, to that degree you have opulence, you're in control. You know, you're very rich, very powerful, you're in control. As soon as you lose that, then someone with more than you immediately steps in to assert their control. And they let you know about it. Right? They want you to know about it. Madhurya means possessing beauty in all circumstances. Okay, so that's sweetness. So then it also mentions that there was sweetness in Ram, because it always has that beauty in all circumstances. But it's not as much as Krishna. In other words, it's nice, but it's not as attractive as Krishna's. Kripa means the desire to destroy suffering of others without any motive. Because if you have a motive for destroying the suffering, then it's not exactly kripa. It's just, you know, part of your machinations to get done what you want to get done. Right? Tejas means the power of subduing time, matter, etc. Oh, okay, because that tejas is what Aniruddha has. Yeah, Tejas, he's Aniruddha manifests. Well, I think we'll get into that in the second canto. But he has Tejas and Shakti. Okay, so and then Shakti is the general. Yeah, so this subduing of time and everything. So that's the thing, is in the material platform, people want to subdue time and karma for their own purpose. That's their goal. Right? So Aniruddha is that potency. I mean, he has that potency. He's the one that who's in control of that.
So it means that all incarnation don't have this potency?
No, it means all of them have the potency. It's just that they don't manifest it. It's just like, let's say, you have a very rich man, but he's also, you know, smart. And let's say for some reason he's going to, you know, some out-of-the-way place. You know, that's not known for high moral standards. How much of his opulence does he manifest?
Not much.
You know. The least is possible, right? So that's the whole point, is that depending upon the situation, it's not that he doesn't have it, he just doesn't manifest it. Because the situation, no one's going to appreciate it. I mean, you don't exactly call thieves appreciating your wealth appreciation, because they're not appreciating that it stays with you. Right? You know, so it's not exactly. So according to the mood, then the Lord does this, but he has all potency. So that's why when Sankarshan Prajumna Ariudan Vasudev, then each one has all the qualities. But each one only manifests certain ones. Otherwise, why have four? Then as Narayan, he does everything. But so that those four are manifested and you can interact in that, then he has four. Otherwise, it's Mahanarayan, then everything is there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Other qualities such as omniscience, affection for his devotees, being controlled by his devotees, are included. Then the difference between Amshri and Amsha is summarized. Right? So in other words, to the degree that they're showing this, that's the, so the Amshi shows the maximum, or the Amshas show specific for the specific situation. Though the Shakti of the lamp and the bonfire is the same, in that both can burn down a town, only from the bonfire one obtains comfort because it destroys cold and other types of suffering. It also bakes potatoes. From completeness, any Polish personality is okay, from completeness, the highest happiness is obtained. And from a partial display of qualities, the highest happiness is not obtained. An example is given to explain this. Though both the lamp and the bonfire have the same capacity to burn down a city, from the bonfire one attains great happiness through its capacity to destroy suffering from cold. This is not available from the lamp. Now, it means, you know, warming the end of your pinky is, you know, comforting. Then, you know. Text 92. Thus, according to the amount of manifestation of qualities, the Lord produces happiness in the devotees, yogis and hearers by his destruction of material existence. Though the Shakti to destroy demons and the Shakti to destroy ignorance in the devotees exist within the Shringa, Samsa, and Krishna, Amshi, the highest bliss arises from Krishna, like the bonfire, because he always manifests all qualities, such as giving liberation to the demons he kills by destroying their demoniac material existence. From the Shringa and other forms, the demons are given rare enjoyment, but not the destruction of their material existence. Adinam means yogis and those who hear about the Lord. It is not unsuitable for Krishna to be one and many, Amshi and Amsha, because he has unlimited inconceivable energy. So here when they're showing Krishna in the Shringa, then they're showing him as Samsa, because of the Lila avatar. So that means he's not manifesting that much potency, though he's part of Asta. Right? So that means others may even be showing more power than him, and they're not part of Asta. Right? So that's the... Okay. It is not suitable for Krishna to be one and many, Amshi and Amsha, because he has unlimited. It is not unsuitable for Krishna to be one and many, Amshi and Amsha, because he has unlimited inconceivable energy. Someone may say, you are saying Krishna's Swayam Rupa and the Shringa is his Amsha only because you have a greater liking for Krishna. You can make this objection if we claim that all the forms were different. However, the objection has no foundation because Krishna has inconceivable powers by which he is both one and many. Right? So it's not that, it's that he's doing all this, so it's not a problem. 94. His is a display of many forms, though he is one, is described in the 10th canto. It is quite amazing that in a single body, Lord Krishna simultaneously married 16,000 women, each in a separate palace. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.69.2. The author quotes this statement of Sukadeva. Though Krishna is one in one body, he married 16,000 women at the same time. He was one, but appeared with many forms. Text 95. Padma Purana explains that, though he has different forms, he is actually one. The Lord, without material qualities, the Supreme Person, becomes many, then again become one. The Creator, without fault, takes rest. It is said in the 10th canto, absorbing their minds and thought of you, they worship you as the one Supreme Lord, manifesting in multiple forms. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.47. Kumar Purana says, because he has inconceivable powers, the Lord is described as having contrary qualities, such as being solid and not solid, big and small, without color, and blackish with red eyes. These lines show the contradictory energies of Krishna. Since the Supreme Lord is composed of knowledge and bliss, he is devoid of material qualities such as bigness or smallness. Thus, the qualities mentioned in the verse must be those of his Swarup. It is seen that his form of the thousand-headed Purusha and the expanded form of Vamanadeva are huge. He is said to be without color since he is without material qualities. Because the modes of nature, those are colors, right? They flavor things. But he is also said to be blackish with red eyes. Megabham vaidyuta vaidyutam bharam. He has the complexion of a cloud and wears the cloth, the color of lightning. Opal Tapani Upanishad. Samam Rishabho Lohitaksha. He has reddish tipped eyes. How can this be said? Because of his inconceivable powers, Aishwarya Yogat. He is said to have mutually contradictory qualities. Virudharta. Because everything is our origin in him. That's why it's unique. This is also another element of the Amsi. Because everything is in him. Therefore, all these contradictory qualities can function in him. While in generally the other, the Amshas, the other avatars, you don't see so much contradictory qualities. They just have basically a very stable and steady, like Balaram is always the same kind of mood. In Krishna, you see all varieties of moods. In Dwarka, at least, you see this. But it's generally, they take on a more stable and steady practice. Still, the fault of birth and transformation can never be found in the Supreme Lord. But contrary qualities are found together in the Lord. Because like generally contrary, this duality, then we take it as material. So they're pointing out that it's not material. In the sixth canto, there... Yes?
Why did not you mention Lord Chaitanya? It is his position.
Well, it means the point is first you have to establish Krishna. Then once you've established and everyone's accepted that, then we can talk about Lord Chaitanya. You understand? It means that there's a method to this. You know, it goes through because you want to, when one thing is completely clear, then you go to the next. Otherwise, you keep going, then there's all these contradictions, and then trying to take care of them. As soon as you bring up one and try to explain it, then they'll come up with a contradiction from another one, and then you can't do anything. Right? Does that make sense? It means you just bring a bunch of people together and try to discuss an issue, and that's exactly what happens. You can't get anywhere. You understand? So that's why you start back and you start the one thing, and when that's done, then you move to the next one, then to the next one, next one. So when you've done that, you've completely cleared everything. Then there's nothing to argue about, because the point is that was already covered before. Right? So if you had a doubt, bring it up then. Like that. So it works nice. In the sixth canto, there's a prose description of the contrary qualities coexisting by the Lord's inconceivable power. O Lord, you need no support, and although you have no material body, you do not need cooperation from us. Since you are the cause of the cosmic manifestation, and you supply its material ingredients without being transformed, you create, maintain, and annihilate this material manifestation by yourself. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.34. The devatas in fear of Vritrasura. Right, so this whole thing, he's not transformed. So what's transforming is his energies. Right? The devatas in fear of Vritrasura began to praise the Lord with these statements. Your activities of play, Vihara Yoga, seem difficult to understand. This means that those activities are easy to understand for those who know about the Lord's inconceivable powers, but difficult to understand for others who resort to logic. Because though you are without shelter and without material body and do not need to take help, samavaya, from us, you create this universe full of qualities by yourself without undergoing any change. A potter makes use of earth, and by actions of his body, with the assistance of a potter wheel, creates a pot and undergoes fatigue as a change. But since you do not have a material body for performing actions, and do not take assistance or undergo change, and yet you create this whole universe, your actions are hard to understand. The Lord endowed with three energies is the cause of the universe. Though you, in possession of the jiva and prakriti, transform yourself in this universe, you do not lose control over the jiva or prakriti. And being the possessor of spiritual power, You are the cause of this transformation by your will alone. In this way, you are difficult to understand. So the point is he's beyond logic. The difficulty is there's this idea that we have to be able to understand in my logic. Right? Does that make sense? But if that was really the supreme point, then why isn't everybody just becoming physicists? Why are they getting married? Right? No? Yeah. Because in other words, logic is not the top. Relationship, interaction, that's the top. That's the text 100. Are you like an ordinary person who, after having fallen into the transformation of gunas, by becoming involved in battles between the devatas and demons, accept their happiness and distress as your own by becoming dependent on them, after showing them mercy? Or are you like a self-contented soul, seeing all things as equal? We do not know. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.35. It has just been stated that the Lord protects the universe. Even that is hard to understand. That is expressed in this verse. You are like Devadatta, an ordinary man who becomes absorbed in ideas of friends, neutrals, and enemies for building a house or acquiring land, and who consequently experiences suffering and happiness as a result of his sinful or pious actions. Like, are you like that? In protecting the universe, do you accept as your own the results in the form of happiness and distress actually created by the devatas, being controlled by them after showing mercy to them, after falling into a transformation of gunas, becoming involved in the form of battles between the devas and demigods? Or do you, of tranquil nature, enjoy in the self, remaining without accepting that happiness and distress, being merely the witness without deviating from your spiritual energy? We do not know. So the demigods, they can't really figure out. He's maintaining everything, but all these things are going on. He's coming and assisting in the battle. So is he taking part in that? Does he feel all the things that they're feeling? Or is he completely separate? They really don't know. You know. So if he's not, why is he doing it? Because the demigods know why they're out there fighting. You know, they want to maintain and protect their positions. But the Lord is out there. But he's beyond all that. So is he actually feeling the same feelings they are? You know, or is he you know, like that? This is the thing. Text 0101.
The intelligence of the demigod, are they given intelligence up to a certain level? So they can only concentrate on their duties, or do they have access to cultivating more knowledge to understand Krishna more?
It's just whatever your interest is. See, the knowledge of Krishna, that's beyond a mundane intelligence. You're working with spiritual intelligence there. Because the soul has spiritual sense, they're chit. Right? So spiritual intelligence is there, just they generally choose not to use it.
Rama and Indra in Krishna's past.
Yes, like that. Because then they're functioning on their material intelligence. And so by the material intelligence, Krishna can't be understood at all in any facet. But it means you can just get a little bit, by logic you can see something is there. But then there's always a logician who's better at it, and then will disprove whatever you say. So the great logicians, means we'll say you can't prove God's existence through logic, but with the great acharyas have shown logically how you can. But the problem is someone will come up with something to some angle to defeat it. So that's not actually in a solid way how you'll understand the Lord. It's by the Lord's mercy. So if you want it, then you can get it. You're not interested, you won't.
But is Nyaya, which is part of the six,
yes,
food, is Nyaya, can we understand it as transcendental logic, or is it just pure material logic?
It means, as Gautama gives it, it's just the process and the mechanics of logic. Now you apply that in Krishna consciousness, then you're working with spiritual.
Right.
But if you don't, you're not. But the point is there it's working on the mechanics, on how good you are at the mechanics is how good it is.
It
right.
Seems to be an oxymoron that there is such a thing as a spiritual logic, because actually on the absolute platform, nothing is really logic.
But the thing is that's why tattva is there. It's all exact. You can explain it very exactly. But at the same time, is understanding it is by the Lord's mercy.
Right.
So the point is you have to be able to accept that these contradictory things simultaneously exist, not that one cancels the other, and at the same time, is they work together like that, you know. So it's not a problem, but yeah, people have had problems with these things. So that's why these are discussed, because in the beginning it's not that much of a difficulty. You know, it's just basically, you know, trying to figure out I'm not God and God is God. Right? You know, that's kind of where we start, you know. But the difficulty comes down is that then when we get into it, then devotees start thinking, then they'll see little things and then start getting bewildered by that. So that's what these are for, is for removing that kind of bewilderment. Because as we see, we're going through this Bhagavatam now. We're chapter 1? 15?
16.
So there, and up to now, Prabhupada has mentioned so much about brahminical culture and that the whole purpose is to do that. Human society is for that. This mission is for that. You know, Brahmins are there for that. We require Brahmins to do that. And it's just purport after purport after purport after purport. And then devotees are kind of like, well, do we need Varnashram? So, therefore, then the acharyas, you know, will take it through and just go through exact things so that, you know, you can see what they're talking about. Otherwise, so Prabhupada, once you catch these, then you'll see that these things are in Prabhupada's purports. But we're just not used to functioning on that level of analyzation because people don't do that. You know, I mean, basically the only logic that comes up, either you have practical, you know, like cleverness, like you'll get from, you know, a practical skilled labor, or, you know, doing practical work. Like I remember in Calcutta, there was the Rath Yatra cart, somehow or another, it went around the corner and somehow got stuck. And we had, you know, big people out there. I don't know if the commissioner of police was there, but the assistant commissioner of police, all these different people and this and that, and they couldn't figure out what was going on. They were trying this, that, nothing was working. They brought in a breakdown truck. They brought in, they hooked up the thing, and they're trying to do it, and it's just getting worse. And then this one, you know, really down-home Australian guy, devotee, just got up in the cart, said, do this, do that, and in about 1 minute, he fixed it. You know? So he has that practical brain for doing like that. So you either get from that, or the other source generally is the academy, the modern academy. And their point is, their logic is only for fun. You don't want to come to a conclusion. So as it gets close to a conclusion, then they start, you know, and then throw out something else. They go into jalpa. So they really, because as soon as you get conclusion, in their mind, discussion is over, and now where's the fun? So they really don't want a conclusion. So then real logic you just don't see. We're not used to it. That's why this seems so difficult. But otherwise, then, if we're used to it, then after a while, then this is just a normal, natural way of thinking. But it's by association. Like that. Because we see all the acharyas use it. So the science of nyaya is given by Gotama. But it's only a science of logic. It's not a philosophy. That's the weakness. It becomes bogus when you make it a philosophy. If you only use it as the logical system for discussing things, then that's perfectly normal. Okay. Did we read 101?
No.
O Supreme Personality of Godhead, all contradictions can be reconciled in you. O Lord, since you are the Supreme Person, the reservoir of unlimited spiritual qualities, the Supreme Controller, your unlimited glories are inconceivable to the conditioned souls. Right. So, the point is unlimited spiritual qualities. So each quality has its uniqueness. So some are more connected, some are different, like that. So they're all coming from him. So, but because they're his, he can manifest whatever he likes, however he likes. That's the inconceivable potency. Many modern theologians argue, this is a Bhagavatam verse.
Yes.
Okay. Many modern theologians argue about right and wrong without knowing what is actually right. Because right? You can't discuss what is right or wrong unless you have a standard. That's the difficulty. There's the concept that the modern liberal position is actually a position. But the point is how do you discuss and understand what's right and wrong unless you have a standard to compare it to? If you have a standard, then you can say, is this right or wrong? Right? Does that make sense? You know, so it's like I have a color chart, and then I want to compare colors. I can see, okay, that's yellow, that's green, that's it. But if I don't have the color chart, then what do I call it? You know? You know, I call this green. Oh, we called that yesterday. Why don't we come up with something new, something fresh, you know? You know, it's like, that's the difficulty. So it's not actually a problem, a position for intellectual discussion. But it's a great position if you want to just speculate.
Yes.
So you're saying Shastra is standard.
Shastra is standard. Because otherwise, then where else do you get standard? Because everybody else is using Pratyaksha, they're not using Shastra.
Hmm.
I mean, once somebody's used pratyaksha to a point greater than anybody else, then he's called shabda. But then you give it some time, and then people say he's not shabda anymore. You know, it's like we're just thinking. Is that everybody knows Einstein, even though today they'll be saying that his philosophies don't apply. You know, but still, anyone before him and anyone after him, still nobody knows. And probably no one will. You know. So the whole point is that the academy is designed for that. It's designed for speculation because the taste is in speculating. Because everybody does everything for taste. Mm-hmm. So the academic does his academics for taste. And that's intellectual taste means speculation. So then you always come up. So they don't mind that every 10 years, you know, their whole world is turned upside down because then you have a fresh, you know, how long can you, you know, chew the same thing? So after 10 years, you have a fresh perspective. And then it's great, you know, then they can go on.
Like, they're putting back on the table Darwin's theory. Darwin's theory?
Yes.
They put it back on the table, you know, they're all thinking, they're rethinking the value of it.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, Darwin just turned the whole world upside down in the 18th century up until now. Now they're reconsidering, was it really true or not?
Yes.
No, so that's going to keep them going for another 200 years.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the point, is that if you don't have something that, you know, that's why these things are good. Someone who's a good thinker, then whether you agree or don't agree, at least they keep the academy afloat. Otherwise, if you didn't have these great personalities, then, you know, basically all you'd have is the Bible. That would be it. You know? And then they'd have to work with that. You know? And most of them aren't willing to go back to Aristotle and you know, Socrates and Plato. So. Okay. Their arguments are always false and their judgments inconclusive because they have no authorized evidence with which to gain knowledge of you. Because they're only using their senses, and the senses you can't perceive the Lord. He's beyond the senses. Because their minds are agitated by scriptures containing false conclusions, they are unable to understand the truth concerning you. Right? Containing false conclusions. Because we're saying here modern, so modern means non-Vedic. Furthermore, because of polluted eagerness to arrive at the right conclusions, their theories are incapable of revealing you. So it's a polluted eagerness. They have reasons why they want to know God. It's not necessarily out of devotion. Their theories are incapable of revealing you, who are transcendental to their material conceptions. You are one without a second. And therefore, in you, contradictions like doing and not doing, happiness and distress, are not contradictory. Your potency is so great that it can do and undo anything as you like. With the help of that potency, what is impossible for you? Since there is no duality in your constitutional position, because he is the source of everything. Dual is when there's two different things that are opposed to each other, but they all go back to him, so they're reconciled in him, so there's no contradiction. You can do everything by the influence of your energy. A rope causes fear for a bewildered person who considers it a snake, but not for a person with proper intelligence who knows it to be only a rope. Similarly, you, as the supersoul in everyone's heart, inspire fear or fearfulness, a fearlessness according to one's intelligence. But in you, there is no duality. Srimad Bhagavatam 6.9.36.37. Okay, so this is a continuation of the demigods headed by Indra speaking to Krishna. No. Okay, so this is in praise of fear of Vritrasura. Okay, this is that pastime. So now, that's a long time ago, that one. So that's not just 5,000 years ago. And notice here that he uses the term modern. Right? Manu uses the term modern. So modern's always been there, right? Isn't that the point? Modern man's always been there? Right? That's it. Wasn't just always the end, it's always fun. So he's always been there. So modern means not Vedic. Right? That's the thing, right? They're not digging around here. They're digging somewhere where there's modern man. It is impossible to be simply a witness in protecting the universe. For you protect the universe by killing so many evil persons. This seems to be like the foolish man maintaining half a chicken, which is dead. By materialistic vision, there seems to be contradiction. But by recognizing the inconceivable power of the Lord, there is no contradiction. There is nothing contrary within you, because in the actions of the Creator to kill the evil and protect the good, there is always neutrality and self-enjoyment. And because it's his universe, he's taking care of it. We're the ones attached to the position. Here it's just, it's supposed to run nicely. Because for him, the attachment is not this, because that's what their doubt is. Which is fine. They're doubting on whether maintenance of the universe or fighting for the demigods, killing the demons, he actually is in a dynamic state or just in a neutral state. Right? Is he attached like the demigods or is he not? Because the point is, that's just maintenance. So that there is, he is neutral. But the same kind for his devotees, there's the attachment. So he does it in a, in other words, he could do it in a very simple way, but he does it in a wonderful way so that the devotees can remember it and think about it. So that's why he's doing it. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes.
Do devotees have the same quality, neutrality and self-enjoyment?
Yes, means in other words, if you're absorbed in transcendence, then that's enjoyment of the self.
Yes.
Right? Self-enjoyment means enjoyment of the self. Means you yourself, just on your own, are happy, satisfied, you're happy. You don't need anything outside. Yes. So the devotees are like that. They need nothing from the world because they're absorbed in Krishna. So that's where the real happiness is. Right, so that's the thing, it seems contradictory. No, but you should be able to do it on your own. Yes, you do it on your own, and then there's the relationship. Mm. You know, so both are there at once. Thus it is not correct that the materialists criticize these seeming contradictions, because you possess inconceivable powers. Many adjectives are then used to support this lack of contradiction in the Lord. The Lord is endowed eternally with the six qualities, Bhagavati, as unlimited qualities such as being affectionate to the devotees and having desires which are always fulfilled. He controls all, Ishware, and is hard to understand for those having no devotion. Anavaghaya Mahatmye. Because his desires are easily fulfilled, he does not have fatigue in creating the universe, right? Because you have fatigue when what you're trying to do doesn't work. If what you're doing works, you become inspired. So you don't become fatigued, right? And so because whatever he desires happens, he never gets fatigued, Right? Plus, he's the source of power anyway, so he wouldn't get tired. But the point is he's always inspired because whatever he wants to do, it's always happening. You know. But so if we connect ourselves with him, then it works nicely. We don't have the same problem because in the spiritual world, there the spiritual bodies don't become experience fatigue because it's always about the Lord. But in the material world, then it's about the body, so therefore when things don't work out for the body, which generally it doesn't quite happen, then we become fatigued. Does that make sense? You get more tired if you're mentally tired than if you're physically tired.
Okay. You always say that you become bored and whatever you want happens, whatever you desire happens.
Yes, but that's why then he goes with what the devotees want to do. And the devotees, they being Shakti, then actually Shakti means Visesh. It has to be special. It has to be different. So therefore, then there's unlimited. And so there's unlimited devotees, so there's unlimited uniqueness. But at the same time, is the spiritual position on its own is satisfying. You don't become bored. Here you become bored because you want something. But the point, so for Krishna, it's not about becoming bored, it's about increasing the happiness. Here we have to do it, otherwise we become bored. So we're not actually increasing the happiness. We talk about it as if we are, but actually all we're trying to do is just, you know, desperately maintain. Is that? Yeah? Because he is affectionate to the devotees, he kills those who hate the devotees. Because he has absolute control. So he's killing those who hate the devotees. For maintaining the universe, that Maya will take care of. Because he has absolute control, he punishes the disobedient. Right? So he has absolute control. Oh, maybe that's how they're working on it. Yeah, no, you'd have to work on that. You'd have to work on these world religious conceptions of the Supreme Lord that he's created, but he's not in control of it anymore. To actually come up with social systems that aren't in line with the scripture. Because then that leaves you leeway for your own enjoyment and your own speculation. Because otherwise, if you understand he's in complete control, then you wouldn't try to do anything outside of what he says should be done. Does that make sense? So then, you know, that would be the natural, that would be the condition, that would be conditioning. One doesn't realize that one's not actually using Vedanta philosophy as a basis for one's perspective, but one's actually using the modern theology.
You mean there are great limitations in the depth of knowledge which is accessible to people who have faith in some sort of God. I mean, there's not much concept of details about...
No, there's not. But at least there's some faith. But the problem is there's the theology then lacks. So then, because the element that things are happening, and so then there has to be if bad things are happening to good people, you know, as you define them, right? Then that means God can't actually be in control. Otherwise, why would it happen that way? So then if he's not in control, then also there's the element that not following all the different rules and that aren't really a big deal. So it's more just about your faith. If you have the faith, then it doesn't matter what you do. You know? Then we end up back with the Sahajis. Because that's their philosophy, actually. Their point is it doesn't matter. So you don't worry about these things. It's just faith. Right? And so Sahajis are a disturbance. Like that.
Who?
I mean, are the scriptures, I mean, we're talking about, you know, Bhavishya Purana and how it describes the religions of Kali Yuga. Are they designed specifically to limit the access to more transcendental knowledge? Because people are born in this age for mostly material enjoyment based on religious principles.
They're designed for that. They're giving the absolute truth, but they're written so that people who aren't really are only interested in it, the absolute truth in a particular way, and are not interested in other aspects of it, then will be pleased. You know, just like this, Tamasic Puranas are written so that one could be happy with the idea Shiva is supreme. It's not that they don't mention about Krishna and all these things, but just they're written in a way that people don't catch it. And then when you have people who are specifically trying to not, are reconstructing these scriptures like that, then you get even more of a problem.
Yeah, I remember Banu Maharaj explain once, when you study Shiva Purana, it's not that Krishna doesn't exist, it's Shiva is put forward.
That's all.
As the Supreme.
It's not even that he's put, so much as put forward, it's just the perspective is taken from there. You know, it's just like you have two people sitting. Now if I take a shot from here, I can see the distance. I bring the camera right up close to him, and then him in the background, it looks like he's very far away. So all it is that that's the perspective. They bring it up close here. But it's not that they're pushing him forward as much. It's just that that's how people want to know. So it's like that. People want to know God that way. And so then that's fair. Because the thing is, if you understand the karma and everything like that, then it makes sense that he is in control. Because the point is everyone's getting what they put in. But you have to be able to take it over lifetimes. You can't necessarily deal with something immediately.
You know, it's interesting in modern religions, when it appears at a certain time, such as Jesus or Moses or Muhammad, it has a certain impact of purity from the very beginning, but then it's really short-lived, and it falls into the hands of
the neophytes.
Make it, like,
it falls into the hands of the neophytes.
It's only hearsay.
And then from there, as it becomes popular, it goes into political and other things, and so it's used for that. That's just the weakness of neophytes. That's why it's not recommended to remain on that platform. Therefore, this whole idea that you make societies and base them on the neophyte platform and saying that this is perfectly fine is not recommended. Because the neophyte platform keeps you here. The Madhyama is progressive. That's why it's recommended everyone take up preaching in that mentality. Even if your realization is not that of a Madhyama, you take up the lifestyle and ideals of one. So at least one more quickly will get there. But if you sit back and say, no, that's fanatic. We're just wherever we are, we're fine. And, you know, all this idea that it should be something else is we don't need that. We're great sitting right here on, you know, our side of the creek. You know, so then, you know, hey. I guess if you push it farther over, you'd have to say pond. You know, so that's the weakness. It's professing neophyte philosophy. They're trying to present it as something more high, but that's the standard trick of Niti. Niti is to present Dharma to those who respect Dharma so that they'll do what you want. It's not about Dharma at all.
But it's the nature of the people of the time. I mean, people are really, they just don't have intelligence. They don't have spiritual intelligence.
That's because they don't want. If they want, they can have. If they want, they can have. You know, it's just a matter of what do they want? What do they want to see? You know what I'm saying? Basically, you can say, if you give that example, one person remained, and so then, you know, 3 days later, that was the person who saw.
You know what I'm saying?
All the others split. As soon as the police came, they were gone. So they didn't want to see more. So everybody didn't catch what we're talking about.
Right, it's like when
Ms. Magdalene.
It's like when Jesus, the Romans comes to catch Jesus and arrest him.
Yeah.
All the apostles are gone.
Yeah, they're all gone.
Know him.
Yeah, and then when he's on the cross, they're not there either. So who's there? Mary's there. Well, the two Marys are there. Right? You know, that's it. You know, because they have that effect. So they're the first ones to know that he's, you know, still around. You know?
Then the apostles later on, they are the ones who actually write everything down and they push it so that the church can be established and they become like...
Yeah, well, it means, yeah. Yes, basically. But the one who wrote it was Paul. So what you have is not what Jesus taught. It's a particular social presentation of what he taught. So that it will be popular. Because that's the whole thing. Paul's was about, we don't want to use the old culture. We don't want to use the old rituals. We want to present something that will be accepted by the, you know, how you say, the Roman society. Because he identified with the Roman society more than being Jewish. So that's technically called Paulinism. It's not Christianity. The 12 apostles, they were Christians. Paul wasn't one of the 12 apostles. People don't know that, but he wasn't one of the 12. He was 50 years later. Like that. So then, that's the thing. So now we're going to base societies, devotional societies, on the same exact principle. We don't want to use these old, ancient, you know, rituals or identities, you know, customs or anything. We want to work with what is the popular, modern thing. And we want to adjust everything so it's palatable to him, to them. You know, I mean, it's presenting as if it's something new. Paul already did that 2,000 years ago. Like that. But it didn't necessarily mean the teachings were presented thus. You know, so this is the reason that the demigods here are pointing out modern. And the Acharyas are pointing it out because it didn't work then. You know, they're showing the flaws. It won't work now. Right? We notice that at the time of the demigods, you know, and this, you know, millions of years ago, or whatever this was a long time ago, then this would be another, you know, culpas, you know, that if you dropped your sword, it hit the ground. And today, if you drop your sword, it hits the ground. So gravity was going on. So these laws still go on. So modern theologians couldn't, you know, were dysfunctional then. They're still dysfunctional.
But Newton gets it right.
Yes. Like that. Because he got it by, you know, I say, he had realization. He had an apple hit him on the head. So that's the whole thing, is that what the Acharyas are bringing out is these examples that there's just this, only this way to do it. It can accommodate everybody. That's the far out thing. It's a set way of doing things, but at the same time it accommodates everybody. Right? The conservatives, this is the way to do it, we can only accommodate this kind of people. The liberals is because it only accommodates, therefore we need something else that accommodates everybody, but no standard. Right? So therefore it just doesn't work. So this idea that we are going to actually make something useful, but as it was already done before. You know? The sophists got rid of Socrates because of the absolute truth, like that, you know, and they were professionals. They were professionals, judges, lawyers, you know, doctors. They were the sophists. You know, so this idea about the professionals and we have to do them. You know, so do we not see the parallel here? But of course, then, you know, according to the axiom of history majors, then is the only thing you learn from history is no one learns from history.
Yes.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because The apostles, they weren't bothering the apostles. They were moving around. They were quite fine. They didn't end up as, you know, lampposts and stuff like that. Or, you know, they weren't, specifically, how you say, lion snacks. But, in Paulism, then it was a, so this whole idea of fitting in, you end up not fitting in anywhere. It's very interesting. But it's exactly the same. It's not that they're doing something new and special in the middle path and all this kind of jazz. This is just directly just the same old that's been going on and didn't work before and doesn't work now. And it won't work in the future either. though it's being presented as very logical and progressive, but it's just the same old regular stuff. Like that. Because he is Bhagavan, he is eternally engaged in pastimes and completely detached from all material objects. Thus, he cannot have any bad quality, right? Because bad qualities come up from attachment to material things, right? If you attach to spiritual things, there's no bad qualities. Do some learned scholars not tolerate such a Lord? In answer to this, it is said, the Lord is beyond anavasare, the arguments of those who argue. In their hearts, gripped by false scriptures, similar to the persons who propound them. Persons who cannot see the truth are vachina, and are inundated with speculation. Vikalpa, resides great stubbornness. Dura vagraha. Right, so, yes, great stubbornness. These are the principles of modern theologians. Vikalpa, or speculation, takes the form of it may be like this or it may be like that. Vitarka, or conjecture, takes the form, is that correct in this case? Right? Because in other words, okay, it's correct there, but in this case, okay, in India it's correct, but we come to the West, is it actually, So that's vitarka. Vichara, or determination, takes the form, it is certainly like that. In this, there is an appearance of truth. Pramana, bhasha, but this is actually despicable speculation. Kutarka. Right? So then you're going to say, it could be like this, it could be like that, but so we take this in this case, like this and that, so therefore it's the purpose, it seems logical. It's using the steps, but actually its basis is not on logic. But you have your external energy which deludes us like a magician's show. Perhaps your actions of creation are of the same source, apparent but not real. This doubt is answered in the next statement. No, your Shakti is real, right? Because otherwise we can say all this is illusion.
Yes.
And so it's not actually here. But no, it's a Shakti, so it is here. Right? No, your Shakti is real because the effects produced in manifesting the world are real according to the scriptures. Right? Our view of it, that's the unreal part. Yata tat yator tan vyadidhat. You create real objects. Ishopanishad 8. The appearance of the material world is not like a magician's illusory trick. Uparata samasta maya maye. Your actions are completely devoid of illusion. But this does not contradict the statement that the Lord is self-satisfied. Atmarama? No, because the Lord is pure knowledge, without accepting the distinction of quality and possessor of quality. But is this not contradicted by the statement saying that the Lord has pastimes, vihara yoga? Since the Lord has placed within himself inconceivable energy in the form of the Icha Shakti, what is impossible? Everything becomes easily done. Shabda, Maho, Dadhi, says, Atma Maya means the desire of the Lord. So if he's self-satisfied, why is he having pastimes? Right? You know, so then here is that because he has the Ichha Shakti. By his desire, it all happens. So it's not that it's a problem. It's just his nature. That's the point. Is God's nature is to enjoy. He's the supreme enjoyer. He's self-satisfied, but he's at the same time the supreme enjoyer. That's the difficulty, because you're thinking it's one or it's the other. O Devatas, do you desire my two forms? One is with qualities manifested temporarily, santodita, and the other is without qualities manifested eternally. One form called Bhagavan has qualities, and the other form called Kevala has no qualities. Though there is actually one form because of non-difference, there is an appearance of two by different conceptions. So even the Brahman is actually still hidden. So this concept that there's Kevala, it's only there, but actually Kevala doesn't exist. There's no such thing as... And you, how can there be an... even if you say it exists, that's a quality. If you say Brahman is just existence, that's a quality. There's no variety, that's a quality. You know, all these things are qualities, so there's no such thing. It just is conceived of as different. Thus, the author of Vedanta says, Gati Samanyata. In all the Vedas, there's only one form of Brahman, Brahma Sutra 1.1.10. It is said, Narada realized Krishna as a mass of light, and then realized it as it was a form with a body. Then he recognized various limbs and understood this was a man, Shishupal Vada 1.3. Okay. Thus, Narada had different realizations of one form from far and near. Similarly, the one form of the Lord is perceived as impersonal by jnana, and by Bhagavan is by bhakti. In the one substance, there is no different forms at all. It's just how you. It's just what you're using to see. So, if you're seeing without bhakti, then he's just all one. And if you're seeing with bhakti, then you can see the form. Yes.
But both are transcendental.
Both are transcendental, but they're the same.
Yes.
It's just a matter of what you're looking at.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
It depends on the person.
Yes, because it's like this. By bhakti, there's form. So the Mayavadis, because they don't have bhakti, they can only see the impersonal. So then they will say that if you're seeing form, that's because of, you know, devotion. But they don't know transcendental devotion, so they only know material devotion. So because of your material attachment, because of your material identity, therefore you're seeing a form in the Lord. But all it is because they don't have bhakti, they can't see the form. It's not that the form's not there, they just can't see it. Like that. Because he's one thing. You know. That's the Lord is one. Right, so that's the point. So there's no difference in this. But it's just a matter, he manifests through his internal potency. That means with bhakti. Then you see him, you're able to perceive a form. Otherwise, you know, if we're 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair and he's unlimited, how we'd see the form anyway? Right, that. So therefore, you can see his form because of bhakti he reveals. Right, so you don't have to get into, well, which one's first and which it's no, they're the same. It's just that through, when he expands his internal potency, then that is through devotion. So then he manifests in a way suitable to interact with his internal potency. But there's a non-difference. He's in a different category. He's not like us at all. That's the whole point. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, otherwise, yeah. What's it? If he was a slob like one of us, there'd be a problem, right?
Hare Krishna.
Yeah. Okay. In the one substance, there are no different forms at all. But if that is so, why do we have so many opinions? These arise from the Lord alone. For you, the Lord, create the various opinions according to the high or low intelligence of the different people who do not know you in truth. So that answers there, all the different scriptures. It's just that they want to know or don't want to know to that degree, then they know. So if there's devotion, they know more. It means you even have, like, that means there was some, a few, there was a small group, I think, in different times that were understanding that worship of the Lord through bhakti, stuff like that. But or even one of them had the idea of a conjugal relationship with the Lord. But that I know of, they kind of all became anatha. You know, that's on a good day, if not, you know, a pot roast or something. You know, so it's most people don't want to know more. Right, it's just whatever's going on, whatever's the position, that's good enough. Because if you know more, it means then you'd have to consider more. Right? But,
and maybe to change yourself.
Yeah, then you have to change yourself, and that's good. That's getting fanatic, right? Yes. So that's the whole point. You don't have to change yourself as you are. Hey, like that. Yeah, just like God said, right? I am who I am. So I am who I am. I just stay as I am, right? You know. So that's the whole philosophy, right? That's why we come here, because we think we're God. These arise from the Lord alone. For you, the Lord, create the various opinions according to the high or low intelligence of the different people who do not know you in truth. This is just like the perception of a rope, which can be mistaken for a snake, a rod, a stream, or a garland. This is understood from the Gita. All these various qualities of living beings are created by me alone. Bhagavad Gita 10.5. So these mentalities, the ideas that they're thinking, I'm creating this, I'm independent, but no, Krishna's created it. And then you can fall into these categories. There's bhakti, and then there's everything else. And within bhakti, then there's shuddha bhakti, and then all, you know, the everything else is accommodated in, you know, like that. With the Shuddha Bhakti, that's its own category. Like that. And then there's everything else. Without activities of a material body, without the support of material earth, without assistance of others, without undergoing transformation, your actions are hard to understand, because everybody else has to use all this. Now the author explains the prose and verses. Asarana, without shelter. In the prose is related to without the support of material earth. In this verse, Amar Kosha says that Sharana means a house and protector. 103. Guna Visarga refers to the battles between the devas and the demons. Attached, patita, to these battles, you become dependent on them. This means that when the devas take shelter of you, being merciful to them, you come under their control. So he's just going to battle just because it pleases them. But otherwise, he doesn't have to do that to maintain the universe. But the point is that since you have to maintain the universe, since devotees are there, then do it in such a way it attracts the devotees, and the devotees become inspired. Because otherwise, Maya can take care of everything. She can manage everything. He doesn't need the person to come. Right? Does that make sense? You know, the governor doesn't have to go to the prison. The warden runs it fine. You know, the warden knows what to do, runs it fine. But he comes there for the point of upliftment. That's the whole point. 104. By being merciful, do you accept as your own the reactions in the form of happiness and distress accrued by the devatas as a result of their actions? Or, because you are Atmarama, are you completely indifferent to all this? We do not know, but there is no contradiction because both can exist in you. This is not possible. Then the conclusion comes. It is possible that contrary qualities can exist in you because you have of your inconceivable powers. Right? Because it's like you're attached to the getting the results, and so you feel the pleasure and pain in that, or you're Atmarama. The point is that you can do both. In other words, he is Atmarama, but because he's interacting with demigods, then he moves with them. That's the whole.
In the same time.
Yeah, at the same time. You know, it's not that it's one thing, you can do them both at once. That's the thing. That's why he's unique. He's different than us. You know, so that's also these points. We get down to this detail, then we understand this is not us. You know, we can't do that.
It's confirmation.
Huh?
Confirmation.
Yes, confirmation that we're not God, yes. So. Okay. Anything else? Okay, then after that, then it gets into the cause, and so then...
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki
Jai
Jayatai Gaur Back to the torture again. Oh, it's more interesting. Because once all this is established, then he can get into all the really sweet stuff. Because he doesn't want. Because once you get into that, he doesn't want anybody having any doubts. You know, so you have to clear everything before that.
It seems that he's very expert.
Yes, yes. So this is our acharya.
Yes.
And Jiva is his assistant. So you see, he does the same thing. Because we're thinking just Jiva only does that, but Rupa does that. So Jiva then is following that line.
Pardon me, please, Maharaj. I just arrived from America yesterday, and I have a message.
I was going to do this thing.
Well, there's a devotee there who was serving here in Mayapur for almost 20 years, and now he's serving in Columbus. He said his name is Swarup Damodar Prabhu, and he used to translate your lectures from English into Bengali. He was a devotee here, Bengali devotee.
Swarup Damodar, Bengali?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Now he's staying in Columbus, Ohio, and he conveys
Columbus,
his...
Ohio?
Yes.
Okay.
He conveys his obeisances to you.
Okay, yeah, tell him that. Hare Krishna. He's doing okay. Yeah, I haven't
he's happy.
Seen him for a long time. Because he was here, and then he was Jagannath Mandir, and then after that, then he was doing various services, and then he did... Yes, after true marriage.
Then he went to Vrindavan and was a pujari for 5 years.
Oh, okay.
And then he came to America to establish a center, but now he's doing service here in our Columbus temple.
Okay, nice.
So by his grace, I'm here now.
Okay, how long do you stay?
I've now got a service with the Mayapur Institute, so I hope long term.
Okay,
And I also will
maybe you just like transferring here to Mayapur to work with them.
Yes, that's
okay,
the plan.
Nice.
So thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, very good.
Hare Krishna.
So that's better.
Balanced.
Maybe you come here, you have some service.
That's fortunate.
Yes. Seems to be this color change from last time.
Everything came together. Thank you.
Okay, very good.
Hare Krishna.
The title of this whole section is the sweetness of Krishna. So all of this is just variety of sweetness.
Yeah.
Not everyone feels the sweetness.
Yeah, we're not used to this kind of discussions on this way, because generally is, you know, means either taste comes from just sensual or emotional interaction, or from dry speculation, and not a whole lot of people get anything out of that. But here is that you're discussing all the various elements, but it's not dry, you know? And so then that pleasure and all that is nice, because then you know all these little details about Krishna. It's just like if you want to get to know, like let's say you're talking with somebody, and then the conversation goes well, you hit it off really good. Then the next thing is you start asking personal questions. The more you want to know more about, so here's knowing more personally about Krishna, how he's the MC, how he manifests more, how he attracts. Yeah, like that.
So then that's all the things, you know. So, you know, what does he do for work? That's called the milas and the slums. You know, what does he do at home? That's called the umsi. You know, it's like that. So that's the element. So it's actually very nice, but it's we're not used to that presentation. We're used to, you know, that's why stories are the main presentation. That's why this is just giving the essence, so to make sure that when you read the Brihad Bhagavatam reads, you actually catch the point rather than just the story and then miss the point. You know, so that's this whole thing. And so since the Brihad Bhagavatam reads is giving the essence of the Bhagavatam, so this is giving the essence of that. So therefore, you know when you read Bhagavatam or read these literatures, this is what it's about. It's about Swayam Krishna. You know, and then all his expansions, and what he does, his pastimes. It's all about the devotee, so it's not something else. So sometimes they get into, oh, but there's this and there's that technicality. But if not seen in the relationship to the Lord's relation with the devotee, then it's basically you missed the point.
Next chapter is the sweet. This is the last chapter.
Oh, the sweetness of the devotees.
This is the last chapter of the sweetness of Krishna.
Oh, you mean the fifth chapter.
Yeah. Okay. And the next chapter is the sweetness of devotees.
Yeah.
From memory.
Yeah, then we're not getting the end. What is he discussing? The problems.
We've got a long way to go.
Oh, okay, no. He's talking about Indra, the Devas.
I think it's a very short chapter.
Next chapter.
It's the sweetness of devotees.
Wow. The Brahmas and other Devatas have various forms and are endowed with thousands of powers. Some Indras and Devatas have lifespans of 100 lives of our Brahma. Some Brahmas have lifespans of 100 trillion Mahakalpas.
Mahakalpa means how long? Lifetime Brahma? What does it mean a day?
That I know of, it means a day. Because a cult means yeah, that I know of. But maybe 10 million crowns of these Brahmas and other protectors of planets praise the shoes of Krishna with their sound. You know, so that pastime when they all go and all that stuff.
Same ones in the right.
Yeah. One time Krishna was sitting in the assembly hall in Dwarka. The doorkeeper approached and said to Krishna that Brahma, desiring to see his lotus feet, was waiting at the door.
Which Brahma?
Yeah. Which Brahma has arrived?
What do you mean, which Brahma?
He says, yeah.
The creator of the 41.
Yeah, so you have all these amazing stuff that just so you appreciate what you're dealing with. Because we say, okay, Krishna's the most sweet, but then at the same time, we absorb ourselves in all these, you know, things to do with position and money and influence and respect and all those things. So that means we don't actually appreciate how sweet Braja Krishna is. Otherwise, why would we be looking for sweetness somewhere else?
On the other side, we are interested in position and respect.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So then
you go through all these things, then we say, oh, these are so dry, but this is exactly what we're into. The problem is why it's dry is because it shows I'm not the one who's actually controlling it.
Wait a minute, there's something wrong with it. Maybe we'll come up in the next chapter.
Yes. Maybe there's the unpublished chapters. Yes.
Thank you, Ryan.
Okay, well, thank you.